Well, kids and grown-ups, all of us, I want to look at a picture with you. So whoever's got the clicker, Michelle, give us one click. What is this?
Welcome.
A welcome mat. Okay, there's one more. Let's see, this one says, so glad you're here. What is when we say welcome, what does that mean?
Come on in.
Come on in.
Glad to see you.
Glad to see you. You belong here. Okay. Here's another one. Might be more accurate for some of us. One more click.
Go away. Okay.
We're probably pretending not to be home.
That's a good one.
That might be mine. No, it's not mine, but could be.
Could be.
Now, that might be accurate for some people. But maybe not quite the kind of welcome we're talking about when we're talking about church. So we've talked a lot about Jesus here in this space. Can anyone help us think of what Jesus's welcome was like or who Jesus welcomed? Tony, I don't know if you know any of these, if you've thought about what does it mean that Jesus welcomes us?
He welcomes everybody.
Everybody.
Doesn't matter who,
open arms. Any other thoughts on what that looks like? Did he welcome them only after they got their lives sorted out? No.
Right or wrong,
they're welcome.
Clean or dirty, they were welcome.
I like that. Clean or dirty. Didn't matter what you looked like. What color your skin was. Why do you suppose Jesus did that kind of welcoming?
Because he loved everyone.
So it's just kind of inherent in his nature. Yeah. And who was he representing to us?
His Father.
God, his Father. And so he was showing what kind of welcome we could anticipate from God. So if we are here, and we are Christians, that means we're little Christs, we're little Jesuses upon the earth, how are we supposed to be welcoming?
The same way.
A plus, Phyllis. Thank you. The same way. So when you have gone to a strange place, and kids, you can think about going to a new classroom or going to a friend's house for the first time or a club. Or grown-ups, you might think about going to a new church to check out or going to a new service organization. How does it feel to be that one new person?
Intimidating.
Yeah? Any other words?
Out of place.
Out of place, awkward. You get nervous. What do you get nervous about?
Being accepted.
Yeah. I never was a big fan of visiting churches. Like now that I'm a pastor, I can tolerate it better. I even enjoy it to some degree. But I always research ahead to know that it is going to be a welcoming place, that kind of thing. But you're nervous about being accepted, about what they're going to ask of you or what are they going to judge you? We were talking just a little bit ago about two families meeting at a wedding. It's like they're both sides are concerned about the other's opinions. So how does a church like ours help alleviate that worry? How do we welcome?
With open arms.
Open arms?
Not prejudice.
With a smile. Getting more specific, yes. What kind of things do we do to help people, like, know what to expect?
Bulletin.
We have a bulletin. They know what to expect. There's not going to be any surprises. I don't have, you know, stand up and state your greatest sins on here. In the past, we've done a better job of wearing name tags. I think mine is in the car. Jimmy has his on. But that helps everybody, whether they're new or not, because not everyone can remember names very well. My brain will go blank even if I've known you 10 years. So that's one way we welcome. Oh, having space open in the back. We all know people like to sit in the back when they're just trying things out.
Talk to them.
Now, in a church this size, this can be dangerous because everybody sometimes descends upon that one person. So balancing out. Have they been talked to? Great. Do I need to? Well, maybe give them a week. But definitely talk to them. Gentle introductions. I was talking, so in the Methodist Church, today is the start of new appointments. So, sorry, there's a gnat up here. Not suddenly doing sign language. So we went to annual conference last weekend. That's when the official, what they call assignments, are made by the bishop, and they say who they're appointing to, what the places are, and it's for a year. It starts July 1, goes through the next June. So this Sunday, we're going to definitely hold in prayers all those congregations and pastors that have a new situation. But one of my friends that I saw there, I knew he was moving, so I just happened to sit down and talk with him for a bit and asked him, you know, how is it going? What do you think? And he was talking about having a meeting with his worship team at the new place ahead of time, and he had watched their online services. And one of their practices that he had to tell them, this is something I'm going to need to end, was that the pastor would have, okay, anybody new here, stand up and introduce yourself. Which is fine if you're an extrovert and like attention. But largely most people don't like that situation. So that's just one more way we think of being welcoming. So it can be tricky. Not everyone wants to be welcomed in the same way. Some people might be offended if you don't give them the opportunity to stand up and announce who they are. But everyone wants to feel comfortable being themselves. Now, a harder question for all the adults. Do we come to church to receive or to serve?
Both.
Oh, gosh, you guys are smart. Churches often get filled with people that want to be consumers. They come to receive. They say, I just want to be in worship. But what they mean is, I want to hear the songs I like, hear a sermon that matches what I already believe and makes me feel good, and talk to the people I already know. But worship is literally giving thanks to God. That's what we do. So that makes God the only audience member, if you will, of a worship service. Everything we do here is an offering. Whether it's our singing or our praying or even our attitude, it's part of our offering. That would include how we welcome other people. Because Jesus taught us how we treat others is how we treat Him. So, Tony, do you know what one of the most famous statues, and Martin, this one's question for you too. Everybody, what's one of the most famous statues in America?
I would say
the
statue.
Oh, you would be right. Oh my gosh. One more click on the clicker, please, Michelle. Statue of Liberty. So here's a picture. She stands in the harbor of New York where thousands of people used to pass by as they were immigrating from other countries. They were moving. Now, on her, there's a poem that names her as the Mother of Exiles. That means mothers of people who have been out of their home, don't have a home. They've left because of reasons for security or safety or for financial issues. Maybe they're looking for job opportunities. Some have been looking for freedom of religion, freedom from oppression, freedom to be who they are. So this place, the United States of America, was meant to be a place of hope, of opportunity, and welcome for those who are suffering in other places. And in the poem, it welcomes those who who are poor, who are yearning for freedom, who want a better way of life. Now, while the United States is not a Christian nation, one of our founding principles is freedom from a government that imposes religion. And yet we find many of the original values and ideas actually align with the welcome of Jesus. Now, things have changed a lot, but if we go back to this foundation, we find things like this poem that reflect much of what the founders had envisioned when they were setting out to create this nation. They had this vision of the United States serving the world. When we've been referred to as a city on a hill, that's a biblical reference. But it's not meant as a domineering, lording it over the others, but as a beacon of hope, a place of refuge, an opportunity. So I got to visit this statue when I was in high school. One more picture, just for you. I don't change a whole lot. It's the bangs. That was in 1993. And at the time we were able to climb the stairs and go up in the crown and look out the windows, I could not find that picture. But the poem that we read there has always stuck with me as an ideal of what our country can be. A welcome to those in need of refuge. And I think if U.S. citizens never read the Bible, but took that poem seriously, they would do the work of the gospel. And this is the part you might find the most familiar. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Now, while I take issue with calling anyone wretched refuse, just kind of like I take issue with the hymn that calls us a wretch, it does give that distinct impression that we're not inviting the wealthy, the folks who are privileged. No, we're here for the ones that the other countries turn their back on. We're a place of rest for the tired and poor. Those yearning to breathe free, that really gives you this image of getting out from under oppression. 250 years into this democracy, we might want to check ourselves. Seems like a few of the folks in power have missed this vision. We might need to remind them. But today our scripture comes from a point in Jesus' life when John the Baptist has been imprisoned. This is early then in Jesus' ministry. And John's inquired as to whether Jesus, this mild, welcoming, loving, healing person, is the Messiah. Because he's not quite the warrior king that maybe John had been screaming about in the desert. And Jesus sends back word to him, people are being healed. The blind are able to see. The crippled are able to walk. The deaf hear. And the dead are raised. In other words, John, connect the dots. That's what the prophets have been saying the Messiah would do. And then he goes on in this chapter 11 of Matthew to talk to his disciples that wisdom, which is often used as another name for spirit, wisdom will be proven by her works. In other words, our actions and our deeds show evidence of the Spirit's presence. But not everyone will understand that. So let's listen to Jimmy as he reads to us from Matthew chapter 11. We'll be reading the end of that chapter, verses 25 through 30.
Matthew 11:25-30. At the time Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and intelligent and have shown them to babies. Indeed, Father, this brings you happiness. My Father has handed all things over to me. No one knows the Son except for the Father, and nobody knows the Father except for the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wants to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are struggling hard and carrying heavy loads, and I will give you your rest. Put on my yoke and learn from me. I'm gentle and humble, and you will find rest for yourselves. My yoke is easy to bear, and my burden is light. The word of people for the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Jimmy.
You're welcome.
So the secret to the good life is hidden from those who think they have all the answers. Those who are in positions of authority, wealth, or even intellectual status. Instead, the good life is revealed to the babies. Okay, not literally infant babies, but those who are childlike, innocent, maybe young in faith, maybe new to it. Literally, the word meant those who are non-speaking. The image this evokes, then, is that God reveals the way of the good life to the least of these. And those who follow Jesus, who actually do the life Jesus calls them to, will find this good life. God will not place heavy burdens upon you. Don't blame God for your challenges. There are common phrases in our culture, such as God only gives you what you can handle, or conversely, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. But my issue with those sayings is that they both make God out to be someone who burdens you heavily. But Jesus, a member of the Trinity, says, "My yoke is easy." God doesn't need or want to give you a hard life. Life will take care of that. Nearly everyone listening to Jesus at the time was living a very hard life of extreme poverty, oppression by the ruling classes, and even a burden of religious expectations. Jesus lifts those from you. He removes the expectations that you have to act right, talk right, dress right, or do all the proper things and the hundreds of written and unwritten laws. And Jesus never even says you have to believe right. Being yoked to him isn't about doctrine, creed, or denomination. It's about a way of life. A yoke, of course, is a harness used to connect two animals together in order to pull a load. It's a sharing in that load. But the word yoke is also used metaphorically, particularly in the Bible, to speak of slavery, of belonging to someone, and to bear the weight of that oppression as you carry all that they ask of you. Jesus says if you yoke yourself to him, he will help you bear your load without adding to your burdens. And the work you will take up with him is light. Jesus isn't calling us only to rest in him, but to work with him. So last week at annual conference, the guest speaker, United Methodist historian Ashley Boggan, reminded us about John Wesley's call to bring the good news of God's love, of Jesus' light yoke and rest, to a weary, aching, poverty-stricken world. Wesley was Anglican, and he was convinced that the only proper way to preach was in the pulpit. But he had a colleague, George Whitfield, who was preaching out in the open. Open-air preaching, they called it. Preaching in the fields, in the coal mines, even in the marshes. And this was happening in Bristol, England. And he would invite John Wesley, but that was not the proper way to preach. However, on April 2nd, 1739, Wesley gave in and joined George out in the open air. Now, that place was considered a vile place to go, a vile way to preach. And so Wesley wrote in his journal that he submitted to be more vile and proclaim in the highways the good news of salvation. He'd come to see that the message of Jesus wasn't meant to be only given in the sterile sanctuary to the people who could come at the time that they had service, but it needed to be brought out to those who needed the good news most of all. Now, his approach was not appreciated by the religious authorities, his bishop, church councils, etc. And 3 years later, he was visiting his father's former church in Epworth and expected that he would maybe be preaching or at least praying, but he was not allowed to even help with the service. So as people were leaving church, someone announced that later that day, John Wesley would be preaching outside in the graveyard. And he stood atop his father's grave to do so, because that was the only land his family owned in that area, and therefore he could not be arrested for trespassing. Now, Dr. Boggan has been presenting to many annual conferences this season, and she's written a book and coined a new Methodist term, vitality. It means the pursuit of becoming more vile by reaching out to those the church would historically marginalize, or going to places that the church would typically deem as unclean. Pushing the boundaries of welcome. She has a book by the same name, and it's much like how Jesus went to those the religious authorities called unclean. The people that complained that he ate with. Yet that was where the fertile ground was for the Spirit to do a new thing. This willingness to bring the news of God's love and forgiveness to those society pushes to the margins or calls wretched refuse is the act of welcome that we find both in Jesus and in the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty's poem speaks of the worldwide welcome she gives, inviting those who have no place in their home country, giving them opportunity and a place of refuge. Wesley talks about how we are all moving on to perfection. No one here does welcome perfectly. Neither does any church, religion, or country. But we are all called to keep working on it. It might seem insignificant, the work of welcome we do in a small church, but I assure you, it is not. Every person matters. We all know personally what it has been like to receive welcome here, whether we've been here nearly our entire lives, or we've just been here passing through. Hopefully that welcome has been good. Now, this is the third year that our conference is living into the new vision statement. You see it posted in the bulletin. Healing the world is the third point. And so this year, our conference-wide focus is on healing the world. But the first step to doing that is to be a place and people of welcome for all. So I hope you'll help me think of ways we can be more welcoming to our neighbors, not just in the church, but how we can move outside. How can we reach outward a little more, daring to be a little more vile? We might ask what that means to us personally, or what that means in this community or to our church. Where can we bring vitality, the good news, to the margins, and welcome to those who most need to know that they are loved? So I'm excited to be back with you for another appointment year. And let's work together toward trying some new ways of doing the welcome of Christ. And not just saying, welcome. Thanks be to God.